Welcome to the Real Estate Investing Club. This is the place everyday real estate investors gather to share their best stories, biggest insights, and favorite tactics to grow a portfolio of cash-flowing properties in today's market. Here's your host, Gabe Peterson.
All right. Good morning, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Real Estate Investing Club. It is a Friday here in Seattle, and we are just getting into the spring. We had our first truly sunny day yesterday, and it is glorious in Seattle when we have sun, because during February, it gets very, very cloudy. And then the sun starts to peek its head out in March, and we're euphoric. So it's a good day, and it's a good day for another reason, because we have Tilden Moschetti with us. He is a syndication attorney and an investor, so he has both sides of the spectrum there to impart his wisdom on us. Syndication, you know, a lot of you guys want to start bigger deals, and in order to do that, you have to syndicate the deal. You don't have to, but it's the easiest way to do it. It's the easiest way to raise capital and structure it. So Tilden's here to take us through that process. Tilden, thank you very much for hopping on the show.
Thank you for having me. I love your show. It's fantastic. So I'm really honored to be a guest here.
Right on. I told you before we got on here, we like to start with stories. I'm sure you got a good one. So take us to the beginning of your story. How did you get started in real estate?
Sure. About 10 years ago, I was an attorney practicing in real estate litigation. So anytime there was a big fight and property was at stake, that's what I would do. I didn't do evictions. I did, you know, the bloody battles over property, whether that was a divorce or a bankruptcy.
Partners getting angry at each other.
whatever it was. It was awful. So I did that for 10 years, and it was kind of torture. So I was very unhappy. I started doing a little bit of brokerage because I saw clients the brokerages were doing pretty well, and it seemed like easy money. At the same time as I was practicing law, and then I had a partner come up to me and show me a deal. It was a triple net medical office in Alabama, and it was being developed, and it was at a really, really good price point. And he said, "This is such a great deal." I'm like, "Yeah, it looks really good." He said, "Well, let's syndicate it." I'm like, "Sure, we can do that." You know, having no idea what he was talking
about. Might as well.
So I thought, okay, well, I'm an attorney, I can figure this out. And got, you know, super into the weeds and tried to, you know, make sense of it all, and at the same time find investors and, you know, get the loans done and do everything. And finally the pieces started coming together about how the syndication works from the legal side. And so as that started coming along, the deal ended up happening. It took us about 6 months that time because I didn't know what I was doing. And
to close?
Yeah. So fortunately, since it was being developed, we had some extra time. Mm. So we were able to like keep pushing the closing, which was needed.
Right. Because sellers in general, yeah. Development, that makes sense.
Yeah. So managed to get it done. And it was great. We had about 20 investors and ended up making them good money. So that worked well. Next project came around, worked even better. My process was smoother, making legal docs, getting it all done, getting it put together. Third deal was super easy. And so fourth deal, fifth deal. So about eight years ago, I thought, okay, well, I'm going to start helping clients full time on putting their own syndications together. So I'm going to make that part of my legal practice and get rid of this whole portion of litigation. And it's been great. So that was sort of my foray into it. Now I do my own deals, but I also am a syndication attorney. And the rest is history.
Nice. I love it. Yeah, I can imagine being a litigator can be a stressful experience, especially if that's all you do every day day in, day out. So it makes sense.
Yeah, nobody's ever happy with you. They're always mad, no matter what. They're winning, they're mad because they're paying you so much. They're losing, they're even more mad. It's awful. It's terrible.
So you dipped your toe into brokering deals. Did you ever go into that fully or?
Not fully, fully. I did. I did quite a few different transactions, mostly just, finding good deals and partnering people up. Was I had a good investor base just because I have litigation, so I knew people and I could match people up. And so with the broker's license, it was pretty simple for me to make some money.
Yeah. So let's go back to that first deal that you syndicated. The one, you know, you didn't. You're a lawyer, so you understand law, but you just didn't know how to do a syndication. You didn't know how to set it up, all that stuff.
Yeah.
Go back into that headspace. For those of, you know, everybody listening, take us through the steps of how you got it structured, how you put it together, and step by step, take us through exactly what happened. Actually, before that, explain to people what a syndication is and the different ways you can syndicate and then why they would choose one over the other.
Sure. So anytime you take money from a private person, from a person who's going to be taking a passive role. So they're not actively like in the deal, making decisions, doing the work, doing those sort of things. It's considered a security. So securities need to either be registered with the SEC, which really means going public, which nobody here is going to do because for this purpose, because it's going to take, about 40 different lawyers and it's very expensive. Or they fall under an exemption. So the security rules have exemptions for people. There's really three that are used: Regulation D, Regulation CF, and Regulation A. Most people are using Regulation D. About 98% of the private money that's raised goes through Regulation D. So that is an exemption to the security rules of registering it. And what it allows people to do is raise an unlimited amount of money from an unlimited amount of accredited investors. And a choice between really either taking some non-accredited investors or taking being able to advertise, to being able to solicit openly. So really then it becomes a choice between those two different rules, which dictate, well, how am I going to market this? How am I going to find investors? And that's kind of how the decision point comes.
And at what point do you need to set up a Regulation D, an actual syndication versus just putting together like a JV doc or something like that?
So as soon as it becomes clear that you're going to be taking money from investors and those investors are not going to have a super active role, that's when it needs to be when it's a syndication or a fund or whatever you want to call it.
Okay. So the activity of the people involved dictates whether they are an investor or they're a partner.
Yeah. I mean, if you're taking a management fee, they're just sitting idly by, they just gave you some money, that's a security. It needs to comply with the rules. It's, five friends all coming together and buying this property and they meet once a week to talk about it. That's not a security. That's like an investment club. So there, it doesn't need to fall under the rules.
Gotcha. Makes sense. And I apologize, everybody. I'm going through a bit of a cold, so I might sound a little nasally. But all right, moving on. So we understand syndication now. Take us again to your first deal. How'd you get it set up? What were the aha moments that you kind of ran into that that you realized like this needs to be done? This needs to be done. Just take us through that first deal.
So when you just get started and you start trying to make sense of the rules, it's really kind of tricky to do it if you don't have somebody to help you. So I call it the alphabet soup because you've got 506B, 506C, 504, Reg A, Reg D, Reg CF. I mean, all these different things and all kind of going on at the same time. And just when you think you have it all figured out, a new bunch of letters or numbers. So it was kind of like the alphabet soup, trying to put everything together. Finally I did. I mean, I went to the, I had a mentor in the real estate world who always said, well, you just look at the lease. So in the same manner, you just look at the law. So when there's a question, just read the law. It's clear. And fortunately the SEC makes it really pretty clear. I like to think of the rules of Regulation D as a real big benefit because not only do you get to do all these things, but the SEC tells you, like, explicitly, this is how you do it legally. It's like it's like in the rules itself is a clear guide. In the actual like documents and stuff, it's really hard to figure out. So really it was reading the rules. It was, and then I finally understood, okay, so I'm doing a rule. In that case, it was a rule 506B. So it was going to be from friends and family. So me and my partner, we raised money. We went out to everybody we knew and just, you know, raise money. And then at the same time, I was writing
PPM. Real quick, going back. So you've raised the capital, you've gone out. How did you do it? Like, what did you present them with? You know, a lot of people, they don't understand real estate. So how did you do the presentation?
Yeah, that was a big learning experience too. Most of it was, you know, send an email blast, nothing happens. Start calling people, and then people started being interested. Relying solely on email blast doesn't work. Nobody says, here, I want to give you $50,000 from an email. Phone calls were pretty good, and then ultimately meeting with people individually was the ticket that really started working. I think
how much were you raising on this first deal?
It was about $2.5 million.
Okay.
So it wasn't a huge deal. It was certainly enough to make it worth my time doing. We ended up with keeping about 10% of the equity of the deal ourselves. So it wound up to be like 12% of the equity. Okay. So it was
12% to GP, and then 88%
is what it kind of worked out to be. And then we had a loan above that, so I think the total purchase price was about $4 million or something.
And were you made that split, were you aiming for a certain IRR for the investors, or what was the reasoning?
That's kind of the next thing that I learned. So I knew we were going to hit about a 15% IRR. So I mean, 15% was really good at the time. And for a super safe, this really was a very safe deal. It was, the tenant was, you know, was a investment grade company we had a 20-year lease from them. It was really good real estate. We were going to sell it in 5 years. Still, it had 15 years left. You know, so it was still going to trade really nicely, and we're buying it under market because, you know, it was still being developed. So it was a great deal. So my first meeting was with a doctor who I had done a lot of business with, both as a litigator and I sold him some properties as well. And I sat down across from him, and I was so excited because I knew I thought this guy was going to come in for like 500,000, maybe 700,000.
$2.5 million. Take it all.
Yeah, it was going to be great. You know, this is like, okay, we're going to do great here. And I sat down with him. We had lunch and was telling him about the deal. And it's got a 15% return. And so how much can I put you in for? And he was just like, nah. It's not for me. I'm like, what? It's a 15% return. He's like, yeah. And I knew what he was buying before. So I knew his real estate. And so a 15% return was fine for him, from my point of view. And he's like, it's just not that interesting. I'm like, well, it's got a 15% return. He's like, no, it's not how I invest. You know, first I invest for cash flow. Right. Mm. So half my money goes to cash flow. Yeah. So it's got to generate more cash. Not that I really need it, but it's just, you know, that's what I look for. The next little bit's got to be a little pop of appreciation. So just properties that are only going to just appreciate. So I get a pop at the end. And then about 10% is just my mess around money. So that's putting in some crazy deal that I'm sure he ended up going into crypto or something strange and just, putting huge risk things. And, you know, if he loses it, he loses it. If he makes it, he makes it. So he makes it big. And so that kind of led me to, like, really part of my investment philosophy is what I call founder investment theory, which is there's got to be more to it than just an IRR. And that's kind of a mistake I see a lot of syndicators make, is they come up with a deal. It's okay. You know, it's 12%, 15%, 20%, whatever it is. And that's what it is. That's what they tell people about it. But that's not how investors think, right? I mean, an investor needs to get emotionally attached before they're going to give you, you know, $50,000, $200,000. So it was developing that idea of that motivation on how people invest that kind of made it so, okay, now I need know what I need to do. I need to do the numbers because they need to rationalize it. Yeah. But at the end of the day, too, syndicators need to be putting in that story about why this deal, because there's 30 other properties that you're that the investors are looking at that are 15% IRRs.
Yeah. Yeah. And I found that a lot of investors, they kind of fit into different personalities. And a lot of the people, mm-hmm. I mean, you mentioned it with this doctor, cash flow is paramount to a lot of investors out there. Mm-hmm. Even if, you know, they could have a 25%, 30% IRR, but if there's no cash flow, it doesn't seem real to them because they're not, you know, they're not going to be getting money every month. They have to wait 5 years, and 5 years is too far out for people to even consider to be real. Even if they are going to get a great return, it's just not real to them because it's not here.
Yeah. And then you've got like high cash flow people like your doctors, those kind of people, and they don't even want the cash. They don't like it's, well, it pays, you know, we're going to pay you monthly. They're like, well, do you have to pay me monthly? Can you, can you pay me yearly? They don't want it, right? And so those people just want, they just give me appreciation. I don't want any cash. And you got to match it up right. Because if you go to a cash flow person and they want appreciation, or you go to a cash flow person with an appreciation deal, they're never going to do it, ever.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter what the deal is, like you said, and vice versa. They just won't do it.
So after that first deal, how has your philosophy and your approach to raising capital kind of changed?
It's all story. I mean, story is the most critical thing. So I'm very agnostic on the actual property types that I like. I don't, multifamily's fine. I don't find there's a lot of pop in it, so it's kind of hard for me to get the numbers up enough.
Yeah.
Unless there's a huge add value component to it. So I like more like industrial or retail or things like that, because there's more things I can do to make some money. But I've got to develop a good story, especially when you start taking them outside of, you know, they hear about multifamily and they hear about self-storage. You start taking them into retail and it's like, I thought retail was dead because of Amazon, because of COVID, or because of whatever. You better have
nail salons. There's still all those people that need retail space.
Totally. Totally. And they make a lot of money. And then if there's a business component to it, like car washes or things like that, you know, suddenly I can give them a better return, slightly higher risk, but there's a business component tied to it and you have to figure out how to manage it and things like that.
Cool. Well, hey, I mentioned before we get on here, we do keep this as a short podcast, so we have already run through our time. So I appreciate everything you've shared, but it's time to jump into the quick question round. Are you ready?
Absolutely.
All right. Starts with education. Could be any form. Could be books, movies, YouTube channels, whatever. I just need two recommendations, one for general life wisdom and then one for real estate.
General wisdom, I would say Darren Donnelly has a series called Sports for the Soul that I love. It's really about getting your mindset right, and he uses sports as a metaphor for it. Absolutely fantastic series of books. And then for real estate, it's actually more of an investing, but man, it fits right in with real estate investing, would be The Most Important Thing by Howard Marks.
Cool. Good recommendations. Next question is for your younger self. So let's go back to the Tilden who was, let's say, just getting to the point where he realized that his litigation career wasn't fulfilling him. Go back to him, look him in the eye, give him one piece of advice moving forward.
You never actually fail. So just work, just do everything you can. Take a lot of risks because you never actually fail.
That's good advice. And that's something nobody said yet. And also, I feel like I've been kind of realizing that more in my own career recently. You can have deals that don't hit the return that you want, but you're not going to, you know, you're still there. You can still do more deals. So just keep moving forward.
And real estate, I mean, come on, never hit zero.
You've got to lay it back. You're still buying an asset. Yeah.
Still got something.
So. Yeah, exactly. All right. Next question is about the United States. It is a big place, a lot of opportunity out there. Give me the single metro, the single city you are most excited about investing in today.
My current hometown, which is Raleigh, North Carolina. Raleigh, Durham area, astronomical growth. It's going to be even more so. What's coming in the future is great. We've got a huge population influx. We've got high tech coming in, left and right. Apple's being built here, and it's a great place to live.
Nice. All right. Next question is about finding deals. It all starts with reaching out, getting in contact with sellers, and then penning up that purchase agreement. So, what is your favorite way to generate leads and find good deals?
Talk to a whole lot of agents and incentivize them to help and work with you. So make sure that, so I keep a CRM of real estate agents. I reach out to them regularly, let them know what I'm working on, and I make it very clear I take care of the people that help me.
Perfect. I love it. It is a relationship business.
Absolutely.
Brings us to the second to last question. This is about deals that did not go the way you expected. A lot of times a wrench is thrown into the mix. But in those deals, we learn our biggest lessons. So what was a deal that went a little sideways for you? And then what was the lesson you pulled for it?
I guess it's sort of the lesson that Charlie Munger came up with, where if a deal is too hard, you should just walk away. I had a deal that was just too hard to make it look right, man. It was awful. So didn't lose investor money. Fortunately, didn't make them anywhere near what they should have made, but, it was, I knew when I saw it, it was bad. Shouldn't have done it.
Yeah. Trust your gut. That's for sure. Mm-hmm. That's also, I feel like that's true for, sellers too. If a seller is being too difficult, in the negotiation, then just walk. Just don't even deal with it.
There's plenty of deals.
Yeah. We're dealing with that right now. It's a single family that we're flipping, and it's a good deal. But the seller, he wants like 25% in earnest money, and it's just all these little things that he's requiring. And we're at the point where we're like, all right, nah, just we'll go to the next one.
Yeah. There's plenty more.
Yep. All right. That brings us to the last question. This is for the listeners. I'm sure people want to reach out, get in contact with you. Two-parter, where can they find you? And then what can they expect when they reach out?
Yeah. So best place is either my website, moschettilaw.com. It's moschettilaw.com. I also have a YouTube channel with, you know, hundreds of videos that just talk through everything about syndication. It's free resource out there. You should take advantage of it. When people call, they get my assistant. We set up a time to talk. It's, you know, how I am here is really how I am on the phone and how I do business. So I'm a very low pressure lawyer, but I get the job done and I get it done good. So
perfect. All right. I will put that link in the show notes. So if y'all want to reach out to Tilden, just click the little more in the description. It'll pull down that full description and in there you can find his link.
Awesome.
All right, man. That wraps it up. Thank you very much for hopping on the show.
Absolutely. I really appreciate getting to be here.
Absolutely. For everybody who's here with us today, thank you guys for showing up. You are the reason we do this. So if you guys have questions, reach out to me, Gabe at therealestateinvestingclub.com. If you want to support the show, just give us a like, subscribe, share. Other than that, I hope you guys have a great week. Keep rocking real estate, and I look forward to seeing you on the next episode. All right, before I officially sign off, I have a quick announcement to make. If you're interested in becoming a passive investor in one of my deals, my own company, Kaizen Properties, is looking for capital partners for our upcoming projects. We invest in what are known as recession-resistant assets, mainly self-storage facilities, mobile home and RV parks, and industrial properties. If you're interested in investing and would like to learn a little bit more about my company, our investing criteria, and some of the previous projects we've done, go to the Real Estate Investing Club podcast at therealestateinvestingclub.com and scroll all the way down to the bottom of the page. Click on the Invest With Us button. That'll pop up the investor form. Fill that out and we will reach back out to you as soon as we can. Or if you prefer a little bit more of a personal touch, you can reach out to me at gabe@therealestateinvestingclub.com. So really, that is it. Again, it was a pleasure hanging out with you guys during this episode, and I look forward to seeing you on the next episode.